Perfect, now that we're official. Welcome, everybody. I'm Sean Milne, your fearful leader, and I am here following suit of Andrew Gruber, who is our fearless leader. I want to welcome everybody to today's budget committee meeting of the WFRC, and today's date is, for official purposes, Thursday, August 13th, 2020. So without further ado, I would like to open up some time for our executive director, Andrew Gruber, to give us a bit of an outline of today's topics. And then I presume, Andrew, you'll turn it over to Lovett and Andrea accordingly. Or Andrea, you're taking minutes dutifully and everything else. Okay. Andrew, over to you.
Thanks, Andrea. Do you want to do the initial roll call stuff?
Yes, please, just so that it's on the recording.
Please.
So I know you're all here because I can see you, so I'm reading it for the recording. You do not need to reply. Andrew Gruber, Commissioner Sean Milne, Commissioner Bob Stevenson, Mayor Mike Caldwell, and now you're jumping around, Mayor Jeff Silvestrini, Council Member Tina Cannon, Commissioner Jeff Scott, Ned Hacker with WFRC, Lovett Baumgartner with WFRC, and myself, Andrea Pearson with WFRC. I think I got everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you. I know Council Member Michael Jensen from Salt Lake County may be also calling in, so we'll see. But we do have a quorum.
We do.
So Commissioner Milne, I know the next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes from the last meeting, from the May 14th meeting.
Yep. Thank you very much. So welcome, Mayor Jeff. We appreciate you being able to join us.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I got a call I could not take. So
We totally understand. We all get it. You're good. Hopefully all the members have seen the packet that was sent out to us and have had an opportunity to review that, as well as the minutes that were provided therein. If there is a motion, the chair would entertain it for either approving, amending, or any derivative that you see fit.
Mr. Chair, I reviewed those minutes and found them to be correct to my recollection. I'd make a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll second that.
Okay. Everybody seconds it.
There is a motion by Mayor Caldwell, seconded by Jeff Silvestrini, and a third by Commissioner Jeff Scott. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. This is Michael. I joined.
Excellent. Hello there.
Aye.
And with that, are there any opposed? Please say nay. Or any abstain? Please identify yourself. Hearing none, we will mark that as unanimously approved. All right. Excellent. And the next item, Andrew?
Is the public comment. But first, can I just note Michael announced himself already, but that's Council Member Michael Jensen joining us. Yeah, and the next item is public comment.
Excellent. This is the time where we have the opportunity to listen to members of the public or other WFRC members that might be joining in. If there is anyone, I feel obliged to say this for the audio recording, even though we can tell from Zoom that there's no one else. Hearing none, we will move along. And so the next item is an action item. It is the review of the WFRC fraud risk assessment and to approve any updates to the WFRC accounting and administrative policy. Andrew, would you like me to turn that over to you?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lovett and I flipped a coin on this one, and I lost, which means that I get to do the preliminary explanation of this, and Lovett will jump in. Maybe I should say you lost because you have to listen to me explain this. This is nothing that will come as any surprise to any of you. The Office of the State Auditor established a requirement that all local governments in Utah conduct a fraud risk assessment, a self-assessment. The deadline for WFRC to do that was June 30th of 2020. We conducted that self-assessment. Lovett, as our CFO who led doing that self-assessment, sent the results of that to the full council on June 30th. And we're now reviewing this with you, and it's our intention, and I think maybe not obligation, but the right thing to do to review this briefly, I think, with the council at our August 27th full council meeting as well. The good news in doing that self-assessment, which I hope would come as no surprise to any of you, is that overall WFRC is in the low risk category based on that self-assessment. The nature of that self-assessment, and I don't know to the extent to which any of you have done this yourself or gone through this or how familiar you are with it, but there's a whole checklist and guidance that comes out. And the items in that checklist are not mandates, they are rather guidance, just that, guidance or advice. And we went through all of those items in detail in this fraud risk assessment, which was included in your packets and emailed to you on June 30. If any of you want, I'm more than happy to share the screen and put this up on the screen if you want me to. I won't burden you with that unless you ask me to. We got full credit for almost all of these items, including full credit on the item that was identified as the single most important, which is the basic separation of duties. Again, this should not come as no surprise. You, as members of the Budget Committee, have worked with us over the past several years to do really thorough reviews and updating of our accounting and administrative procedures. The Office of the State Auditor has been very helpful in putting out guidance and best practices, and we have always kept up with and valued that that input. There were a few areas that we did not get full credit on, which I think it makes sense for me to briefly note to you. One of those is, have all of the board members completed state auditor online training at least once in the last 4 years? We were not able to confirm that every single one of the WFRC members has done that online training. None of you have WFRC as your sort of first public entity. You're all with WFRC by virtue of being involved with another public entity. So we actually truthfully felt comfortable that we didn't need to force people to do that on our behalf. It was going to happen independently. Secondly, there's a question about having at least one member of the management team getting at least 40 hours of formal training on accounting, budgeting, or financial areas each year. We did not have that either. And candidly, this is an area that probably normally, if we were going to do it, it would be for Lovett to do. You all know that Lovett has been planning to retire. And thank God she volunteered. I didn't even ask her, but so I bless her so much that she volunteered to stay for longer, given all of the circumstances, the unusual circumstances with the pandemic. We went through a process. Commissioner Scott was very helpful in that of seeking applicants for her replacement. That kind of got upended a little bit by coronavirus. We actually, I think as you remember, we got to a point where we were seeking to hire a particular person who then coronavirus blew that up. And she ended up saying, I got to stay with my agency and help them through coronavirus. And so we kind of pushed pause on that. And thankfully, Lovett has agreed to stick around for as long as she's willing. And I thank her just about every day for that. Say again.
Hire somebody.
Yes, we will. But my point, that's just an opportunity to give you a little update on that. My point is that Lovett understandably was not doing 40 hours of training in this last year. Again, it's not a mandate, it's just a advice. So we will look to, as we go forward in the future, making sure that whoever we have in our financial and oversight staff have all the right training they need. The last point, which is the one that actually leads to our recommendation to modify our accounting and administrative policy, relates to the audit function. First of all, our budget committee, you, serve effectively as the audit committee for the organization also, in that you receive the audit from our external auditor and you meet with that auditor every year. We think that it makes sense to codify in our policies that the budget committee also serves as the audit committee. So we have proposed to you a modification to our policies that again, codify that. Say, Budget Committee functions as Audit Committee. It'll oversee the external and internal audit functions, et cetera, et cetera. I am more than happy to talk through that, or love it to talk through that in more detail if you would like. You know, we'd certainly value your, you know, giving an eye towards those modifications, proposed modifications to the policy, and letting us know if you have any questions or suggestions on that. I do want to note that one thing that sort of comes up in that space is that the, where is it here? On the checklist, it asked the question, does the entity have a formal internal audit function? And we didn't feel like we could check the box and say, yes, we do on that one. And this is in part reflective of the fact that we are a small organization, meaning we don't have on staff an internal auditor. Lovett and I and Ned, to some extent, perform some of those functions. This is a topic, and Lovett, I'm going to ask you to explain this briefly, that Lovett has gotten some guidance from other external folks on, or suggestions from some other external folks on, about, you know, what do we do about internal audit? So Lovett, can I turn to you about your conversations and then for a moment, please?
Yeah, a few years ago when we updated our accounting policy, this came up about how do we have a review process that gives us a level of comfort that things are being done appropriately and that we're following our policies and that complying with the good accounting practices and all of that. Had a really good conversation with Ryan Roberts at the State Auditor's Office. I said, Ryan, there isn't anybody else. I don't have anybody else I can give that to. And he said, well, what you should probably do then is, you know, we recognize that you're small and that you know, it doesn't make sense to hire a person just to do this one thing. So he suggested that I share the general ledger detail with Andrew. Andrew and I talk all the time about things that I'm doing accounting wise. And, you know, I know Andrew's not an accountant, but he's very aware of what I do and he's aware of our policies and procedures. And so he and Ned both and Andrea as the compliance administrator are also checking to make sure that we are following our policy, which is to a large degree what an internal auditor would do. So they felt comfortable by us, you know, handling it or using that mitigating strategy so that we didn't have to hire somebody, okay? That said, you know, it's something to consider. Maybe you could, in the future, contract with a CPA firm to perform that function. That is an extra cost. Andrew and I won't say we argue, but we discuss this a lot, that I almost think your resources are better spent supporting an accounting staff. But that's a decision that you're all going to have to make because I'm not going to be here. So there are things to consider. You have to think about what your level of comfort is with the person sitting in my chair and the oversight with the budget committee. They're another source. If there are people on the budget committee that are willing to perform part of that function, that's also helpful. So you need to, I guess, think about those things. We left the policy kind of broad so that we could. Again, as Andrew has said several times, this is not a requirement. This is a, if you can, this is a good idea. So I'm going to leave it at that.
Thank you. I'd love to get some feedback from the members of the committee on this. Now we have the good fortune of having two of our members, Council Member Cannon and Commissioner Scott, who are accountants. That has not always been the case that we've had accountants or financial people who are by profession financial people on this committee. So does anybody have any comments about this issue?
Go ahead, Scott.
Andrew, this is a...
Go ahead.
I am not as qualified as Council Member Cannon. I'm just a financial advisor. I'm not a CPA. So, I agree with Lovett. I think where we do have an external audit that's done, as long as there are multiple sets of eyes, yourself, Ned, Andrea, and then we receive the financials at all of our meetings as well. As long as there's multiple sets of eyes going over it, I don't know that we necessarily need to have an internal auditor on staff. I agree. I think WFRC resources are, you know, better spent on programming and, you know, maybe somebody that can assist with the accounting, but not a full-blown internal auditor.
I'm going to add to that because I'm management accounting, not public accounting certified with an emphasis in tax. So I'm not, that's actually what Sean and I were discussing. I think it's important that there are several sets of eyes, and I think you're providing for that through the budget review and also the audit that's happening on your financial statements every year. The only thing that this happens all the time in smaller organizations. That's where my specialty is. And so I'm used to seeing this. The only thing that I could see that you could possibly add, and maybe you're doing it and I've just never seen it, is a fraud assessment that is sent anonymously through your staff so that if there are concerns internally, you're recording that or having a way for that to be reported confidentially so that employees feel like if they see something, they can say something in a safe mm-hmm. environment. But other than that, that's the only thing in an organization this small that I can think of that is cost effective and still covers your bases.
I have a question about whether, you know, a lot of organizations, you know, like our city basically have an audit committee that helps with this function that's supervisory at least. And there could be reviews of check registers and, you know, I don't know that we want to do reconciliations, but at least review of a reconciliation done by staff. Those are the kind, that's something you could do where we may involve some of our members that have experience serving on audit committees for their jurisdictions that might be a help check that box, I guess.
Hey, Andrew. Here at the county, we do have an internal auditor and we do have a very active process that we go through, you know, through our committee. It has been good. We do have, Tina, as you spoke up, we do have a hotline and we have had, I don't want to say, you know, numbers, but we have had different calls or different things that have come in that have tried to point things out, which none of them really panned out to anything, but it has allowed us to be able to look and see what some of the complaints may be to try to get them cleared up before there becomes internal problems with, you know, hearsay in a sense. But again, we're talking 900 employees at the county and definitely a lot bigger budget than what's there. When I was at the city, Mayor Jeff, we did have the audit committee and we worked kind of similar with what you're saying as far as that goes. I do know on a couple of the other boards I sit on, this same question has come up and I wondered if there would be a way of, in a sense, trying to see if we can put together, you know, a consortium of different groups that, you know, could hire, in a sense, an internal auditor that would work for a lot of people. And that may be too difficult to try to do. But the one thing that I will say that I have seen here at the county over the city is that being able to do, because one of the things we do is that, in a sense, randomly, but, you know, with purpose, we will turn around and go into each of the different departments to do audits, not to look for something that is illegal, but maybe look for ways we can improve things with it. And again, Mayor Caldwell, I don't know if the size of Ogden, whether you guys have an internal auditor or not, or how you work it over there, maybe give us your input.
We don't have an internal auditor. We have an internal audit committee, and we go through that, you know, internally with our staff and comptroller and everything else, but we do not have a full-time internal auditor and we have 650 employees.
Love it. Do you have any, I'm sorry, Commissioner Millen, were you about to say something?
I was just going to say, of course, at the county level, we have our internal auditor who does not do the performance audits, but does manage the fraud/tipster hotline. And we have a codified audit committee. We pay them a de minimis $1,000 a year. They're citizens of our county by the way we've got it set up, and they have to meet no less than two times a year or to go through the external audit process, break it down for folks. So it's similar in this fashion from what I see. And it's, you know, how we address in part this state auditor's sheet as well. And they also are who anything that comes in through the anonymous tipster line or an email, they're the ones that, you know, are tasked with responding to that. So I hear a blend of what everybody else has said. That's kind of what we practice here too. And like Tina said, it's cost effective in relative terms. Our requirement is that they also have to be in an auditing profession. And we knew when we set this up, when I first got here, that first or second year when I got in this position, there's a professional database, which Tina and Scott, you probably know more about than I do. So we knew that there are a number of residents that qualified that are in the audit and or accounting space. So they're local, they have the professional expertise, and they're the ones that make it up. Not entirely volunteer, but also pretty darn cheap when you think about, well, when I know what they do, and the de minimis costs of about $1,000 a year per person. So that's all I was going to add.
Thank you. And love it. I want to give you a chance to react to this, but let me just say that I hear what all of you are saying and appreciate the recognition that there's a difference between an organization with 29 people and a county or even a city. And so we try to figure out what makes sense. And I'll just give you a few quick reactions here. I actually think it's good that some of the things you all are raising are things that we have changed in part inspired by the suggestions from the state auditor. For one, we just created a hotline. We didn't have that before. We created a hotline. We put it on our website. We shared it with all of our employees, Councilmember Cannon, to your point. So I think I felt good about that. I feel even gooder about it now, better about it now. And I think one thing, this is in the details a little bit, but maybe what we should do, Ned, love it. We can talk about this internally, but it may make sense that we make sure that if there is something that goes to that hotline, that it doesn't just go internally to us on staff, that maybe it goes to the chair of the budget committee. That's one. Two, Mayor Silvestrini, you talked about having the audit committee. And I think, again, I feel good about the change that we're proposing to our policy here, where we are officially recognizing, codifying that the budget committee also serves a dual function as the audit committee. And I think that some of the issues that you're raising about review of reconciliations, et cetera, love it. I think we should probably explore. There may be other things we ask of you as a budget committee, like that we would send you some more materials, give you the opportunity to review them, another check on those. And I think that we should go down the path of exploring that. The final thing I'll say in response to Commissioner Stevenson's point about some of the external audits that happen of some of our functions, we do periodically get audited, not just by our regular annual external audit, but we periodically get audited. Lovett is sort of making a face because right now we're undergoing a normal routine 5-year, Lovett, help me. It's the audit on the URS.
It's a compliance audit. They're usually about every 18 months.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's mainly they're just looking at, whether or not we are paying the pension and the contributions that we're required to, and that there are not post-retired people that are actually collecting money from us in some way.
Okay. I mean, so point being that we do periodically get audits from other external sources, which we...
Federal Highways will sometimes do an audit where they will ask for a month's worth of transactions. They're making sure that their money is being handled the way they should have. I would just, 2 points.
Yeah.
In regard to Council Member Cannon, our employee policy has always had a section in there that employees are required to report any suspicion of fraud, misuse, abuse, any of that. In addition, our annual or our external auditors talk with people in the organization that have various positions that might be either subject to fraud or that they would know about it. So they actually don't just talk to me, they talk to other employees as well. So that happens. With regard to reviewing, I think it was Mayor Silvestrini said that people ought to be reviewing reconciliations and bank statements. That already happens, but it might be a good idea if we gave that stuff to the entire budget committee. You know, I don't know whether we need to wait for an approval from everybody or just make sure we provide it to you. But we do provide the bank statements, the payroll journals, the check registers, all of that goes out to the council chair, and the check register goes out to the council at large. So some of that stuff is already happening. We could probably do a better job with this group, make sure that this group has all of that information. And I'm more than willing to do that. So.
Love it. I appreciate those comments. I'm just going to make one comment on sending it out to the whole committee or without it being specific. What I find more often than not in organizations, especially small, is when it's the responsibility of everyone, it's the responsibility of no one. Mm-hmm. And so without it, that's my only caution on it, is that we would want it to be very specific in this is the person who you would expect to review randomly or be watching for it. And that they have some training in what they're looking for. But all of those are fantastic things. I'm not being critical. That would just be one more step.
No, I agree. So, okay.
So, Mr. Budget Committee Chair, with real appreciation for this discussion, I think it's our recommendation to you that you all make a motion to recommend to the council the modification to the accounting and administrative policies that does the things that we talked about.
Excellent, thank you. So members, with that from Andrew and the great discussion that we had preceding it, is there a motion? Remember, this motion is a recommendation to the full council on what we would suggest they approve in order for us to be a very low risk next year, presumably. Well, like Tina said, if it's everyone's responsibility, it's no one's.
I feel like I got put on the spot. Was I supposed to be taking notes for what we were suggesting? And what, Lovett, do we have a summary of recommendations over what we talked about and what wasn't being done? Is there something specific
What we are asking you to do today is to make a recommendation on changing the accounting and administrative policy to create the audit committee. And then further, once that committee's in place, and it doesn't have to be today, we're not trying to solve the internal audit question today. We brought it up as a, you know, these are things that the audit committee will do. We're not asking to make a decision on those today. We're asking to make a decision on the policy itself that creates the audit committee, who gives them that responsibility.
Okay. So moved. I think you said it.
Second.
So, Chair, I would make the motion that we recommend to the full committee the creation of an audit committee with responsibilities to be determined and outlined by recommendations of the full.
You know, if there's one thing I can, if there's one thing I can add into that, I do think that we should try to find the one
cut out.
They can basically confidentially pass information.
You cut out a little bit, Bob. Yeah. Can you repeat that?
Okay. Yeah, I think we should add in there that if there, to try to come up with a way that if we do have a confidential, I don't want to use hotline, because I don't know if we set something up, but come up with something that basically would allow employees to feel comfortable if they want to report something. And I don't know exactly how to do that, but I think that would be good too. And I think, you know, part of the reason we're doing this is because of what we're getting out of the state auditor's office. Mm-hmm. And I think that would go a long ways also.
So in addition to that confidentiality, you wanted that information to be passed on to the budget committee chair as well, right?
Yes.
Can I, Councilmember Cannon, just one clarifying comment on your motion. The way that I'm understanding this is that the action you're taking now is to recommend to the council that they adopt the proposed modifications to the accounting and administrative policy, which we sent out to you. So that's written modifications. And then, and part of that is establishing that the budget committee also serves as an audit committee. I mean, in fact, that's the main change in those policies. And then we've had a great discussion here about some approaches, which then we will take as direction to continue working with you in your function as an audit committee as we go forward. But the actual action for the council is to approve the modifications to the accounting and administrative policy. Is that correct?
It's amazing how you read my mind.
Okay, thank you very much.
So the way I'm understanding it is today you're gonna recommend that the council change the policy to establish the audit committee. We're not asking you to be the audit committee today and do anything, but the way I hear you is that next time we meet, you want us to have maybe, some suggestions that come from this group here about what we're going to do, how we're going to do it. That's what we're trying to do, is develop an actual policy on how we deal with fraud risk. And that would be the job of the audit committee. Clear as mud?
I'm seeing her hand or shake her head. She's shaking her fist. Yes, so I'm going to construe that as the chair, take some personal privilege that is indeed the motion of it. And Mayor Caldwell, does your second still stand?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Well, committee members, we do have a motion and a second. Hopefully we all feel very comfortable understanding what that motion and the recommendation for the full board is, the full council is. So calling for a vote, all those in favor of the motion and the second as they've been presented, say aye.
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 Excellent. And those opposed, please say nay, or if you're abstaining, please so note. Excellent. Then that shall be reflected as a unanimous decision. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. All right. So the next agenda item is a discussion of our financial projections. So Lovett, I presume that being turned to you? No? So, okay. I screwed up. When I went first. This time I screwed up and went to you first. All right, Andrew. Good, sir. Okay.
Thank you very much. And I'm just going to let you all know that we have on the last agenda item after this is executive director's report. I don't have anything to report other than our next council meeting is on August 27th, Thursday, August 27th. And we'll take that fraud risk assessment and the modification to our policy to the council as a recommendation from the budget committee. And Commissioner Milne, we will work with you on what the best way is to present that to the full council. Okay. Okay. So, of course we go through an annual process of adopting our budget, that looks ahead to the next fiscal year, but it is periodically prudent to do an assessment of the longer term financial stability of the organization. And that is particularly true at this moment. Given two factors. One, the economic uncertainty caused by the COVID-19 pandemic and recession, which is something that all of us and all of you in your own individual units of government are certainly dealing with. And then two, more specific to WFRC, is the impending expiration of the Federal FAST Act on September 30, 2020. And as you all know, the great majority of WFRC's funding comes from federal sources via that Federal FAST Act, which as of right now has not been reauthorized. You know, so now we have every expectation that there will be a short term, maybe into the past the election, maybe 6 months, maybe a year, don't know yet, a short term authorization, and then a lot more debate about a potential long term reauthorization. But it creates a very real uncertainty in our budget. So it's in recognition of those two challenges that we thought, let's take a look at our long-term. And I also want to say that this is something that historically the budget committee has done. Some of you that have been with us for some time now will remember about 5 years ago-ish, we went through a really intensive process as a budget committee of looking at our long-term projections. And we saw a fundamental issue, which was that our costs were growing a little faster than our revenues. In part because there are some of our revenues that don't have inflators on them, and basically all of our costs inflate. And so we went through a really healthy process under the leadership of this budget committee to diversify our revenue streams and establish regular inflationary adjustments to the revenue streams, bring in additional revenues to cover additional services, and also control growth in our expenses. And I'm happy to report to you that through that work, we have really stabilized the long-term financial status for the organization. And that's something that I dare say we're proud of. Another part of that overall strategy, which is a long-term strategy, is that we maintain a fund balance, which is roughly 50% of a year's budget. This is a conservative strategy, which is designed to insulate against a sudden or significant revenue drop. So for example, if the federal government was like, we can't get our act together, we're not reauthorizing the program, boom, your money is stopped for some period of time, we don't have to go lay off a whole bunch of employees. And I wanna be really clear that this strategy is not meaning that we have excess money. It is rather, it's a time lag in that we're essentially spending in federal dollars, we're spending this year money that we got last year, so that we always have that time lag. So if there is a temporary cessation in funding, it doesn't hit us immediately. So given that, what we have done, that's sort of the background. And I guess I should say that we are not saying to you in any way that we face an immediate crisis. We are stable as it stands right now, looking out ahead now and looking out ahead into the future. But we thought it was a good time to do a careful review given those twin uncertainties of pandemic and federal funding. So we put together for you and sent out to you a five-year financial projection. And if I may, I'm gonna bring this up on the screen here. Let's see, because I just want to point out just briefly a few things to you about this financial overview. Can you all see that? Thumbs up. Yeah. Okay. So what you see here, five-year projection, this shows, let me go back up here, expenses on the top, funding sources on the bottom, last year's actual spending, the 21 adopted budget, and a five-year projection out to the future. And then in this column J, it shows potential strategies to control costs or to increase revenues over time. What I want to do is I'm going to take you initially just right to the very end of this, which shows you a table, 21 through 26. The blue are expenses, the red are revenues, and then the green is that fund balance, the end of year unobligated PL, that's federal money planning dollar balance. And what you can see looking out over the course of several years is a pretty stable picture of expenses and revenues coming in close to each other, and also having that fund balance maintained at a relatively level. And so that's what we're looking for overall. Now, I want to note to you that that part of the reason our spending came in lower than anticipated or planned in FY20, because we initiated some cost savings measures, you know, early on in the pandemic. We have continued those cost saving measures into FY21, not because we've lost any revenues, but because we're being careful. So like I think most or all of you, for example, we have instituted a hiring freeze and and have not given any salary adjustments. That's something that we're going to have to reassess over time. We also, and now I'll just come back up here to just note a few things that we can look at over time if we need to, if we run into trouble. In the strategies, we have the option to not fill vacancies or make benefit adjustments. One thing that we're talking about with our landlord, the Cicero Group, we have a 10-year lease on our building, which has a 3% annual inflator on basic lease costs. We are having a discussion with the landlord about potentially extending that lease term from 10 years to 20 years to give us long-term stability and push that inflator from a 3% to a 2% inflator, which will help our long-term costs. There's a whole variety of other things I'll say on the revenue side, and I'll give some real credit to Commissioner Stevenson and Mayor Silvestrini for working with us on the possibility of increasing some of our federal funding sources, surface transportation program, modifying the rules on the CMAQ program so that we can use some of those costs for our admin, cost of administering that program, et cetera, et cetera. There's obviously a lot of information here, a lot of detail here. Our objective is in this item is to give you an overview of our financial standing, the risks that we're facing, but also, again, I'm happy to report that I think through the work that we've done, and when I say we, I include the budget committee in looking at our long-term approach, that we're in good shape, but that comes through being careful and being proactive about our expenses and our revenues. So we're not recommending any action here. It's more just an item to get put out to you and see if there's any thoughts or discussion or questions at this point, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Fellow members of the committee, the committee to end all committees. We're probably doing it wrong if it's an end. Are there any questions or observations after Andrew's quick review?
So I just have a comment on commercial property values. So I mentioned this to Sean over another topic we were discussing, but commercial properties are going to be highly impacted by what we're experiencing through COVID as we go into work, the reality of work from home, and then also in shopping from home as well. What that's going to do to our commercial market is yet to be determined, but it's not looking positive. So that's why I would hesitate to lock yourself into anything over 20 years at this point. I'm not so sure it's going to be inflationary. I think it's going, as the market is flooded with commercial properties, that it's not going to devalue. So, but I don't know. I'm not the economist, but there are some things that we should be thinking about as a board long-term on what the long-term impacts of COVID will be on commercial property, not only on the revenue side, because so much of your local government is funded, especially school districts, on that 100% value on commercial property, that they're the long-term impacts for COVID on all of these revenue sides and expense sides for WFRC are very real and probably should be very, very well thought out before you sign anything that's 20 years.
You know, I agree with what Tina's saying. I think that one of the things that we're going to see, you know, economically is office space becoming very, very wide open as far as that goes, which of course is going to drive costs down. I think we're also going to see retail may have some problems because of online sales that are there. And I think we just need to be careful until this is over with before we sign anything for too long of a period.
Go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, let me react to that briefly. Amen. And this is the uncertain circumstances we find ourselves in. In a way, it's that circumstance that gives us the opportunity or the leverage to negotiate something with our landlord to make an adjustment on even what applies over the current lease term, let alone an extended lease term. So to some extent, we're thinking of this as like, let's take advantage of this opportunity. Maybe we're not asking for enough. Maybe instead of a 3% to 2%, it should be 3 to 1.5, or I don't know, something. I'll tell you that part of what motivates my own thinking on this, and I'd welcome, you know, Ned, Lovett, or Andrea to comment on this also if you'd like, is maybe I'm just conservative in my long-term approach to the budget issues, but I worry that at the end of our current lease, 10-year lease term, that the market in our area, now this has been a long-term worry pre-COVID, let me say, but that I worry that at the end of our current 10-year lease term, the lease rates for our space in our area at the gateway are going to be way above what we would be paying at that point. And so what I am fearful of is that we get to that point and the landlord's like, look, we'd love you to stay, but you got a 25% or a 40% or bump or whatever on this. And then we're kind of hosed and it's a big hit on our budget or we have to move or something. And so that's like what motivated this conversation initially. Now, what about the downward pressure, Councilmember Cannon, that you're talking about? On the other side of that, we might get to the point at 10 years where we're overpaying and we could negotiate to drop it down. And so, you know, who the heck knows where that's going to be? And there's a lot of uncertainty. And so I will tell you, I don't know, is this personal personality? I don't know what it is, but like there's part of me that is like, I don't want to be a gambler on it. I'd rather be like, let's lock in something that we'll feel confident with, that's a good deal, so we eliminate the risk or the uncertainty, as opposed to trying to, you know, gamble somewhat on the possibility that at 10 years we'll be able to negotiate a better deal. That's not necessarily saying that's the right way to do it. And so I appreciate what you're saying. And, you know, I'm not sure what the right thing is to do right now.
Mr. Chair.
I do think that you need to consider the inflationary part of this as well, because I think we're in a textbook defined inflationary period. And so knowing what that is in real dollars versus dollars that are coming in, I'm glad to know somebody else is confused about what to do with it, because I'm seeing it for every business I'm working with right now. It is a real uncertainty. So join my help.
Council Member Jensen, did you have a comment?
Yeah. So a couple thoughts. I mean, I agree with Tina and Bob that the new norm going forward is going to be drastically different. And I don't think people, from my opinion and people I've talked to, I don't think we appreciate how different it's going to be and remain. So when you talk to commercial developers, they're coming to grips with the fact that they're going to slow down what they're building. I mean, you have large tenants who are already telling like Kem Gardner's group that they're not going to take the space they've already told them they're going to take. So from 4 floors, they're going down to 1 floor of office space. And I think you're seeing in the commercial world that people are actually more productive working from home than they have been going in. So I think you're going to see the norm be 2 to 3 days a week where people are working from home. So it is going to drive what the commercial rates are. I personally think you're going to see them hold, if not maybe decrease, because there's somewhat of what's under construction and what there currently is. There's somewhat of a glut, you could say, right now. The other thing I think for WFRC that we need to look at is what's going to be the new norm for traffic. Mm-hmm. You drive I-15 now, and it's not the same freeway that it was back in March. I mean, we're having the best air quality we've had. You talk to traffic engineers right now, they don't know what really to do as far as traffic. They're at a loss, and they're using their old models, but you talk to them privately, and they're flat out saying, we don't know what the new norm's going to be for traffic. So I think across the board, there's going to be impacts that we're not looking at that's going to directly affect ultimately the budget, since that's what we're talking about. Because what are the feds going to do with their traffic studies? Are they going to keep funding at the same level? Are they going to back off? Is there going to be other areas that they're going to put money to? So getting back, Andrew, to the point of the lease, I'm probably in a position where I would tell you to be cautious, because you really don't know what the new norm's going to be. So, I mean, I could pontificate longer.
What does cautious mean? In that context, does cautious mean, well, wait and like, don't do anything at all now? Or,
well, I guess I'm like where Tina's at. I would be careful getting locked in long term, because I don't think office space down there is going to be as people needing it or wanting it down there as much as they do pre-COVID, or they did pre-COVID. I mean, what's interesting is you talk to some of the major home builders right now. You talk to Ivory Homes, Destination Homes. They will tell you that they are changing the designs of their homes, mm-hmm, based on COVID, to where you're not going to have a formal living room anymore when you walk into a house. They're building and redesigning so they have office space that has a separate back entrance that's insulated from the rest of the house, so it's basically soundproof, so that they can do exactly what we're doing. They work from home, they're gonna do Zoom and WebEx calls. So for home builders to already see that there's a change and making these kind of adjustments, commercial builders that recognize there's an issue with the market and they're making changes, I think we should look at that and realize it is going to affect all of our budgets. It is going to affect, now, what's the Fed's going to do? You can't add $2 to $3 trillion without at some point having to pay the piper when it comes to inflation. So what's that going to do? So that kind of bodes to your point. Maybe we lock in on some inflationary possible increases now, but I would say still be cautious because we don't know what the market really is going to be like at commercial spaces like that. I mean, look at downtown Salt Lake right now with their retail and commercial. You know, long term, I don't know how the city's going to balance their budget if people don't go back to work downtown because they're so reliant on their sales tax and then on their commercial that I don't know. I mean, good luck, Merritt Mendenhall, on what you're going to do long term. So it's so uncertain. I would just say be careful.
All right. Mayor Silver
told us exactly the opposite yesterday. So, I caution is warranted, but a lot of people are hungering to get back to the office. I don't know. I think it's really hard to know what the right answer here is, because I think I can see that this is a blip too, and that people will return. And you know, there may be an advantage in trying to lock in a good rate. You know, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to do. Maybe you take a middle ground, Andrew.
So I'll just say that this conversation, the broader conversation, you know, you're speaking our WFRC language here, right? Like we're living this planning and thinking about what is the future and how is it impacted by COVID. And Councilmember Jensen, I think all the points that you made are true and super interesting. I don't know that it necessarily points to a decision here other than being careful in that. Two things. One, again, I think that pre-COVID, the market in the area that our office is located, that sort of west of downtown, that area is so prime. And we got in and locked in a good deal at a point where I think if there wasn't COVID, if we were normal, then the rates would definitely be going up well above our 3% over the course of that 10-year period with all the development that has been happening in that area. So what could happen is the impacts of this in our specific space could be, well, rather than a pre-COVID norm that it would have gone up on average in the market of, I don't know, I'm going to pick a number, 5%, 6%, 7%, in which case we were at a really good deal point, it could come down and the depressed level could be 3%, you know, 2%, something. Not that it would be like a negative, right? And so, you know, what are the impacts of that going to be? The other thing, you know, Michael, you asked the question sort of, what does Mayor Mendenhall do? It's a fascinating question. And again, this is sort of more on the planning side, but we're still the fastest growing state in the nation in terms of our population. And there is a real opportunity for downtown Salt Lake to take some of that office space that it was planned for office and even used for office to convert it to residential with the population growth that's coming. And this is a fascinating topic, I think, on a planning basis, but if I was Mayor Mendenhall, and I've talked to her about this, there is a way to convert your downtown approach to bring people to live there because people still want the experience of living in a vibrant urban area, even if you don't have as many people commuting for work into the area. So I think there's, again, uncertainty. I do not think we should read the current situation as the death of downtown. It creates risk, but there's all sorts of possibilities and we could spring back. And so it's in that context that we're thinking about this lease issue.
So, can I just say one thing to that? So Andrew, that would be interesting. So she would make up on the sales tax side. She does lose 45% converting the commercial back to retail or back to housing. But let's say that's true, what you're saying, then I think you and we as a state then need to look at the gas tax because it's going to even take a bigger hit if you concentrate more people and they use mass transit. So again, getting back to the planning, how are we going to fund going further down the road? How are we going to keep up with the maintenance? I mean, you know, what UDOT says about their bridges and overpasses and how far behind they are statewide. So that poses an interesting dynamic then if Mayor Mendenhall is able to do what she's doing. So we collectively at WFRC need to go back and look at the budget, at least on the local side. And then again, on the federal side, what's the gas tax going to do?
Right.
It's just going to keep getting eroded away even more.
Right.
I think Tina's trying to say something, but she's muted.
Ah, good. Somebody did it. You can't have a good Zoom meeting until that happens.
Everybody's on to me. They're keeping me quiet. But I was actually on a blog discussing this very thing on residential properties in metro areas. And I'm just going to speak from the rural perspective at this point. We're having people buy sight unseen coming in from California.
Yeah.
And I think Utah's experiencing that overall. But the other impact of COVID is very real. And do you really want to be that close to your neighbors that you're now looking at like they're Norman Bates? I'm not so sure where we have seen the full impact of where this is going to hit residential as well. And in that close quarters, I think people are wanting long-term more of a spread out. We may be switching how we're looking at housing as well. So those long-term impacts have yet to be felt, which is one of the reasons why I say again, I think caution. Andrew, I think you're going to balance inflation and the lower demand on commercial properties are going to offset each other, and you may be in a hold situation. But again, if I had that crystal ball, I'd be making more money than I am in this job. So,
before Sean Milne says something, I just want to note that I think Norman Bates was a country boy.
Mr. Chair, we don't need to. This is not a decision point, like where there's not action. This is a discussion, and I really, really value it. So I guess where we're left is we'll keep. And I'm trying to be mindful of the time also because I know we're already at the end of our hour here. We'll keep thinking about this, and if I will just say to you that I think it's in part my job and our job as a budget committee to reduce risk over time. And so, we have this possibility to take advantage of the uncertainty on everything we've talked about to negotiate something that is better for us long-term, which is a risk avoidance strategy, which maybe, we end up missing a potential that at the end of the initial 10 years, we could have negotiated it down even more. So that's a potential reward. So to me, it's ultimately comes down to balancing that risk reward. And honestly, I'm motivated by the notion that we can create stability in our long-term budget. That's a strong motivator for me. Not the only motivator, of course. And this conversation has given us a lot to think about. And I think I personally need to process some of this. So Mr. Chair, I'll turn it back to you with that.
I have some much to say, but so little time, and I don't want anyone to be bored by my pontification. But given my prior experience and still business ownership in a space that allows, because of technological advances in the last decade, if not the last two, that enable us to have what we're doing right now, right? We have to stop and think about this. 10 years ago, what we're doing right now wouldn't have been possible. Mm-hmm. And so many of this adaptability that's going to influence us is because of where we're at in time and space and the technology that's come along. And what Michael or Councilman Jensen has mentioned is absolutely true as well. I think the only thing that I feel that I should add, in addition to so much more I want to say that everybody's already opined on, from inflation and how our nation is monetizing our debt and how inflation will likely go up to a tax shift for government agencies like us when you end up converting commercial viable spaces into residential, and those that remain commercial will then likely see a tax rate go up in order to compensate for that kind of element. A lot of thoughts on these things. But Andrew, as you think about your own staff and the space that you have right now, combined with what a 10-year plan might look like on your staffing needs, and you think about how that will shift and what you could do to help them stay at home so that we're not hypocrites about transportation planning and then requiring them to come into a space that really maybe they don't need to because they can do their work from home. I think that there's plenty of reasons right now to just be cautious as the fly on the wall and look and see what the market indicators are showing from people who, to Tina's point, they do make money off of these kind of innovative, revolutionary kind of workplace shifts that happen between agricultural and industrial revolution to technological revolutions and things like that, to just cautiously read voluminously on what those folks are seeing in the marketplace, but be prepared to pounce fairly quickly once we all kind of have these meetings, as they'll happen on a regular basis, and our guts all kind of converge to the same conclusion at the same time, to be ready to pounce at that moment. If that's 2% negotiation, great. If it's, if it's 5% because we're monetizing our debt and inflation becomes 7%, maybe a good deal is 5%. Instead of, the 7% that inflation might become. And if we think that that's not realistic, just look at the late 70s, early 80s. It can happen. And just because it happened 40 years ago doesn't mean it won't happen again today. But anyway, all that pontification aside, I think we should all be paying attention, and we don't want to be late to act. Mm-hmm. But I think we're all acknowledging today, now is not the time that we have to act. But we shouldn't just, put our heads down and lose an opportunity for good negotiating potential. All right, so with all that said, our next meeting date is on your packet. And we kind of got the unofficial executive director's update, and being cognizant of the time, I think we're right up against that. Is there anything further to add? Other business?
Love it, Ned or Andrea, is there anything that we missed that we, no, are we good? Looking around, team? Okay, we're good, thank you.
Okay, and I'm not hearing nor seeing anyone's body language indicate that they've got anything to add under other business. So, as chair, I would entertain one final motion.
Move to adjourn.
There's a motion to adjourn by Mayor Caldwell. By Tina, unless she's feeling really peaceful today. With that, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Fantastic. The meeting shall stand as adjourned. Thank you, everyone, for your
Thank
time.
Thank you very much, everybody. Have a great day.
Doodles.